Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I'm Team Ready Size Bishu, and today is the 108th episode of Vahini Satsang. What an amazing journey it has been since Bhagwan gave us this inspiration to walk on this path of discovering the delight of immersing ourselves in the beauty, sublimity, profundity of His immortal writings. And it began with Prema Vahini, the stream of pure wisdom, the stream of pure knowledge, the stream of unsullied stream of sublimity that this Prema Vahini has been. So after we took chapter by chapter of Prema Vahini, in the last four sessions we have been summarizing the entire text. As many of you are familiar, before we started this discussion, we actually ventured to retranslate and see if we can have the translation as accurate as it can be to the original Telugu of Swami. So, to some extent, you might find variance with the published Prema Vahini that is available in the Sai bookstores. We tried to revisit the original and ensure that we are as true to what Bhagwan has written. And we discussed week after week little segments of every chapter of Prema Vahini. 30 chapters, 107 sessions we have had. And in the last four sessions, as I mentioned, we have been summarizing whatever we have discussed. So you had the first summary session done by Sai Prakash, and then I did one, then he did the next. The previous episode was the fourth summary session of Prema Vahini. And I thought probably we are done, but suddenly I discovered that actually chapter 30 is a very long one. And in fact, very interestingly, I was thinking it would be so nice if we have 108 episodes of this series, and it is Swami's will that we continue today, because last time I thought that I am done with it, and I was thinking what should I do to make it 108 episodes. And today when I looked at what we have done, I just discovered that the chapter 30 is so long that mistakenly I thought I am done with chapter 30 in the previous episode, but no. There are so many more segments to chapter 30. And so today we are in the finale session of Prema Vahini. So I'm going to discuss and share with you the beautiful thought process that Swami tried to instill into us in the later part of chapter 30. So segments 30.8, 30.9, 30.10 to 30.15. So that is what we discussed. And today we will go over these segments. And as I share with you my understandings of what Bhagwan has written, let me begin by saying that when I was trying to understand and analyze this beautiful flow of thought that Swami is trying to convey here, all these segments, Swami is focused on what is the goodness that one has to cultivate. We all know that we have to do good, we have to cultivate goodness, but Swami is clarifying here what is the goodness we have to cultivate and how we should do it. And He goes on to explain to us how goodness declines. When does it decline? He analyzes very deeply how it happens in the world today. Why we lose sacredness and piousness in the world. And then Swami then gives the methods for restoring the goodness quotient of the world. So that is, in a few words, what we are going to discuss today. Swami is going on to actually share who can do it. Now, if you have to restore the goodness quotient of the world, who can do it, how it has to be done, what can you and I do, how to do, how long should we do, and when will we know that we have done our job? And then what happens to the world once sanity and goodness quotient returns to optimum levels? So that is what we will go through today in this 108th session of Prema Vahini. So with prayers at his feet, we begin. In chapter 30.8 segment, Swami says that every person should lead their life in such a way that they cause no pain to any living being. Swami says this is one supreme duty. It is not just a wish. It is not that a desired thing. Swami says this is one supreme duty, that we should not cause any pain to any living being. And Swami says, just like you spend time in daily upkeep of your body, it is again the prime duty of everyone to earmark suitable time for prayer, for repetition of the Lord's name, for meditation, and to do service to others. When these are not desirables, these are our duties. And Swami says, just as you will run away if you see a cobra, or you dread to touch fire, that is how you should be away from sinful acts and acts which harm others. And then Bhagwan says that just like gold and riches and comforts are dear to all of us, in the same way, our interest towards God, in the same way, we should have deep and steadfast interest in loving God, in doing good acts, and in making others happy. So here, first Swami is establishing that you have to do good. That is your duty. And how close it should be. It should be as close to you as you accumulate all these things. We spend a whole life trying to ensure that our living is comfortable. We want to amass a little wealth. We want to amass a little relationship. And that is the reason why we want to have wealth. So the passion with which we go about accumulating these, Swami says, we should have that much or even more interest in doing good, in loving God, in doing good. So first Swami is establishing that this is something that we have to do, and this is our supreme duty. And then Swami says, many times people think that there is no goodness now. But Swami says that it is not that it is not there. You cannot strengthen and deepen a non-existent thing. It is already there. It is very much there. It is just that these qualities have become weaker. And the Lord comes only with the purpose of promoting these values and bringing about the decline of the opposing forces. And then Swami goes on to the Gita and gives the shloka, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkrutam dharma santapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. How incarnations of the Lord are for the protection and promotion of sadhus or noble souls. And then here in the propagation and in the upliftment of the goodness, the huge role that sadhus or the noble people play is what Swami goes on to stress. And Swami says, when I say sadhus, it is not just people belonging to one religion or one color or one caste or one stage of life. It is not just a brahmachari or a sannyasi or a grihastha. It does not refer to, or it is not, Swami says not even human beings. I mean, it reminds me of Sai Gita. Even Sai Gita can lead you towards God. So it's not only human beings. Swami says it refers to all religions, all stages of life, all races, all creatures. And Bhagwan then talks about the Brahmanishtas, the people who are established in God contemplation. And Swami says that all these sadhus or these Brahmanishtas, they played a very important role in the past. And they need to play important role in the present day also. But before Bhagwan goes on to that, Swami says, first you should understand the grasp the greatness of the one who is a Brahmanishta. And Swami says, our main problem, today we have poverty, though it will be difficult for us to connect a pious soul and the poverty around us. Swami says, it is because Brahmanishtas of today, the holy men, the sadhus of today, are not living up to the mark that we have poverty around us. Swami says, for fire to increase or decrease, fuel is the only cause. There is no other reason. If there is more fuel, there is more fire. More the fuel, Swami says, more the illumination. So, if we say goodness is not there, we have to fuel it. It is the nature of the fire to burn and give light. And Swami says, what? The fire here is the fire of Buddhi. Buddhi, the wisdom of the spiritual aspirant, which produces the light of wisdom. And what is the fuel that we have to give to this fire that is Buddhi, which gives the light of wisdom? The fuel. The more the fuel, the more the wisdom. What is the fuel that we have to give? The fuel of renunciation, peacefulness, truth, kindness, forbearance, and most important, selfless service. Selfless service. Swami says, the more you do this, more the Buddhi of the spiritual aspirant will produce the light of wisdom. Only trees growing on fertile soil can yield good fruits. Similarly, only hearts that are pure can acquire sacred feelings, divine grace, and even they can get the power to bestow blessings. They can confer blessings. That's why a pure heart is vital. And then Bhagwan goes on to talk about the Brahmanistas of the past who had that pure heart. That's why they could bless people. They could draw divine grace. And Swami says the problem with the Brahmanistas of the present is this. Even though they are doing the same dhyana, they are saying they are doing the dhyana, they are doing pranava, they are doing namasmarana and all that. But the sadhus or the Brahmanistas, the holy men of the past and the holy men of the present, if you compare, there is one difference. And Swami says the difference is in the decline in self-control of the current day holy men, current day Brahmanistas. Somewhere unable to control the vicissitudes of the mind, unable to control the vagaries of the senses. In fact, this reminds me of Swami Vivekananda, who once compared the monks to others, and he said, as is the difference between a firefly and the blazing sun, between a little pond and the infinite ocean, between a mustard seed and the mountain of Meru, the legendary mountain known for its size and treasures. Vivekananda says, such is the difference between the householder or the normal person and the holy man, the sannyasin, the Brahmanista. only when the Mahapurushas who engage themselves in unflinching meditation of God in solitary places decline, when we have the decline of such holy men, that is when suffering descends upon the world, Bhagwan says. And then he goes on to explain how one can establish themselves in Brahmanista. Anyone who yearns to establish themselves in Brahmanista, Swami says, must seek solitude, must practice dhyana and japa at specified times, must acquire one-pointedness through these spiritual exercises, and always be eager to do deeds that will bring about the welfare of all created beings, and be ever engaged in performing acts without any concern for the fruit thereof. So anyone who wants to be holy, who wants to be a Brahmanista, and the misery of the world today is because we don't have people who live up to the status of a holy man. Anyone who seeks to be a holy man, Swami says, you have to seek solitude, you have to practice japa and dhyana at specified times, and you should be eager to do deeds that will bring the welfare of everyone, and do it selflessly, no fruit expected out of it. In fact, once when Swami Vivekananda was in North India, he told his disciples, you must try to combine immense idealism and immense practicality in your life. You must be prepared to go into deep meditation now, and the next moment you should be ready to go to the fields and work if you have to do. That is the combination that we need in the Brahmanistas of today. You must be prepared to explain the intricacies of the scriptures now, and the next moment to go out and sell the products of the fields in the market. You should be able to have thorough knowledge of what is mentioned in our sacred text, and at the same time be ready to go out and sweat it out for society. So he says, a true man is he who is strong as strength itself, yet possesses a woman's heart, a heart full of compassion. Bhagwan says, only when such men come upon the earth that all suffering will cease. And then Bhagwan brings in a very beautiful analogy to explain the problem of the current times. Swami says, just like in the world today, you have kind-hearted doctors who run medical institutions to serve the diseased and the cure. What we need is spiritual centers set up by the holy people, holy personages, in different places, who are experts in treating the maladies of worldly life. So if you have a physical health problem, you go to a doctor. But similarly, we need these spiritual doctors, and we need this spiritual medical center set up by holy men who can help people to come out of their diseases of worldly life. Because all these people have been mired by diseases like ignorance, untruth, immorality and ego. And they can be cured only by the medicine of Brahmagyana, of that supreme wisdom. And with supplementary doses of Shantam, Sama, Dhamma and Satya, Swami says, peacefulness, fortitude, self-control, truth. So all this have to be taught. In fact, this is something that many times set me thinking also. Whenever we have a problem in the world outside today, you know, be it poverty, be it unemployment, most of the time we are only doing measures which are curing the symptoms, but it is not curing the disease. Nothing is being done in a large scale to improve the goodness quotient of the world. If we do if governments, for example, are fully focused on ensuring that we are here to build the moral fiber of citizens, the amount of time, energy that is spent in creating artificial intelligence, in coming up with new technologies to solve another 10 new diseases that have come, but if we spend that much more time, energy, resources to ensure that people have more fortitude, people have more discrimination, if people are not really torn between the pressures and pulls of their senses, then probably we will be doing more good to society and in a lasting manner. And Swami says, today things have become so different. Even the great men of today, the so-called great men of today, give those who approach them the medicines that they demand. They want to give only what people want, not what is right. They compromise with dietary restrictions, succumbing to the wishes of the patient, Swami says. So what happens in this situation? The doctor dances to the tune of the patient. And the doctor does not mind doing this because he wants name and fame. He wants the patient to go and tell, this doctor is a very nice doctor. He didn't ask me to not eat this, or he didn't ask me to exercise. He just said, you know, you are fine and I'm giving you this. This will take care of it. But which is not true. So I said, this is the current sorry state of affairs. Ideally, the doctor should diagnose the ailment of the patient correctly and cure the malady. And that is how he should be the recipient of gratitude, love and joy. On the other hand, if the doctor's focus is on his selfish ends and he's thinking of the name and he's thinking about self-aggrandizement, then he is actually doing things which is deteriorating the health of the patient and in fact destroying the patient's health. Swami says, just like what happens in this scenario, the same is happening in the other scenario. Spiritual leaders and men in authority today need to rectify their conduct. Only then there will be welfare in the world. Swami says, there is no use of any number of public talks and promotions which are only for self-aggrandizement. You have to demonstrate the ideals in action. The purpose of doctor is to serve patients, not themselves. Similarly, the task of holy men is to awaken those who are mired in the slumber of ignorance and in the whirlpool of ego. Greatness lies in diffusing the differences and laying the foundation for universal love. Swami says, those who do not do this, they are not the salt of the earth. They are in fact like mud. A holy man is not holy if he is highlighting the differences among people. If in some way he is contributing hatred in society, if he is leading to unrest, he is only putting people more and more into ignorance, and we don't have dearth of such holy people and preachers today. Even though they might be very fanatic about one cause or very passionate about one cause, but they, at the same time, they are spreading hatred. They are forgetful of the supreme truth. In some way, they are also after name and fame and power. They are not holy men. Holy man is one who only wants to diffuse the differences among people and who lays the foundation for universal love. So Swami says, if there are people who are spiritually aware of the reality and are familiar with the essence of all the scriptures and also who lead a principled life, then such abominable qualities will not take root, and even if they arise, they can be immediately mitigated. So we need people who are spiritually aware of the reality and who are familiar with the essence of all the scriptures, and at the same time, they lead. They practice that in action. They lead a principled life. And even as Bhagwan is saying that this is what we need today, Bhagavan also mentions that if the world today has whatever level of peace and happiness, it is because of the spiritual power and penance of such good and godly men. The world is whatever it is today. We see the goodness and the compassion around us. Whatever beautiful things that the world is giving us, it is because of the spiritual power and penance of good and godly men. So, if there are more good and godly men, there will be more peace and happiness in the world. And if there is poverty, misery in the world, it is because somehow we don't have good spiritual doctors, or those spiritual doctors have lost their moorings. In fact, Swami Vivekananda once said, the history of the world is the history of a few men who had faith in themselves. That faith calls out the inner divinity. You fail only when you do not strive sufficiently to manifest infinite power. Swami Vivekananda said, the history of the world is the history of few men who had faith in themselves. So it is these good and godly men who have faith in themselves who actually write the history of the world. Vivekananda said, we need a heart to feel, a brain to conceive, and a strong arm to do the work. One man contains within himself the whole universe. One particle of matter has all the energy of the universe at its back. One particle of matter has all the energy of the universe at its back. Microcosm. Macrocosm. The entire macrocosm is in the microcosm. You have a solar system inside the atom. And you have a solar system completely 1,000 light years away outside the atom also. So here was Swami Vivekananda saying the world is what it is today. It is because of few people who had faith. As Bhagavan would talk about self-confidence, capital S. But at the same time, Swami says, such noble men should not only be in bliss by themselves, but also endeavor to share this with everyone. So it is these good people who just did not restrict themselves to their own salvation. They constantly were working for the world. In fact, to a disciple who wanted to practice spiritual discipline for his own salvation, own mukti, Swami said, you will go to hell if you seek your own salvation. Seek the salvation of others if you want to reach the highest. Kill this desire that you have for your own personal mukti. He said, if you kill this desire for your personal mukti and if you want to work for the salvation of others, that is the greatest spiritual discipline. Work with your heart and soul. And most important, don't think about the fruit of your work. What if you go to the hell working for others? That is worth more than to gain heaven seeking your own salvation. Swami Vivekananda instructed. There is no point going to heaven only thinking about your own salvation. He says, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa came and he gave his life for the world. Vivekananda said, I will also sacrifice my life. You too do the same. Believe me, from the shedding of our lifeblood will arise gigantic heroic workers and warriors of God who will revolutionize the whole world. All your sacrifice will not go in vain. That will result in the rising of heroic workers, spiritual workers and warriors of God who will help to take the world into a heaven of peace and love for all. So Swami says, one's selfish needs have to be sacrificed. There must be constant effort to do good to others. One should wish for the welfare of the world. With all these feelings filling the heart, one must meditate on the Lord. This is the right path. The noble men of today should be on this path, where they are constantly doing good for others, where they constantly wish the welfare of others, and constantly they are in meditation. That meditation is internal. Swami says, if great men and those in authority are thus engaged in the service of humanity and in promoting the welfare of the world, then all these evil tendencies, hatred, pride, jealousy, conceit will not invade the minds of men and pollute them. And the divine positions, mercy, truth, love, knowledge and wisdom, all these precious virtues will be safe from harm. In fact, Swami Vivekananda is talking to all his brother disciples. Once he said, remember, for salvation of the soul and for the good and happiness of money, of many, a sannyasin is born in this world, a monk or a holy man is born in this world. He is born to sacrifice his own life for others, to alleviate the misery of millions rending the air with their cries. He is here to wipe away tears from the eyes of the widows. He is here to console the hearts of bereaved mothers. He is here to provide the ignorant and depressed masses with ways and means for the struggle for existence and make them stand on their own feet. A holy man is here to broadcast the teachings of the scriptures to one and all. A holy man is here to rouse the sleeping lion of Brahman, of divinity in the hearts of all beings by the knowledge of Vedanta. It is for these purposes that a holy man lives, is born in this world. So that is what the world needs, and it's because the holy man of today somehow have not lived up to what their name asks them to stand up for, that the world today is in this condition. In fact, Bhagavan goes on to say that you have the police and the authorities. Now, the police and authorities can overcome only external force. I mean, they have no power to destroy the internal enemies of man. They cannot just do it. Our internal enemies, they operate inside us. And these can be uprooted only by the teachings of good men and by the knowledge and love for the Lord. Only by satsangam, only by the company of the holy and the great. What is happening now is, imagine if the police and authorities who are responsible for apprehending thieves, if they themselves succumb to the wicked, what will be the condition of our administration if the police and authorities, they themselves become thieves? Swami said, this is the problem with the great souls of today, of the holy men of today. Because they have become corrupted. They have given up the path of world welfare. They have succumbed to sensual pleasures and name and fame. As I mentioned earlier, the only difference between Brahmanishtas of the past and Brahmanishtas of today, Swami says, is their lack of self-control. And such people, their level of their ignorance only increases. And once that happens, then suffering in the world is only on the rise. These spiritual elders, they are the rulers of their internal state. Administrative authorities are the rulers of the external state. Both these groups have to act and direct properly. Only then there will be happiness in the world. And when this does not happen, when this has to be corrected, when the spiritual leaders have to be told and reformed, as well as administrative authorities have to be shown how they have to practice before they can preach, when these have to be repaired, that is when the Lord comes. Yada ida hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyukthanam adharmasya tadatmanam sijamyam. Lord Krishna says, whenever dharma declines and adharma raises its head, I myself take birth. So that is the reason why the Lord comes. Because when you have failure at both ends, people who are managing society outside and spiritual leaders who would help man to control their inner faculties, if both fail, that is when the Lord descends. But at the same time, Swami says, even for the advent of the Lord, what is needed is prayers of the great. Only when the prayers of the great and noble happen, that is when the Lord does. Because otherwise the Lord has no reason to act. The Lord always is a witness. He will act only in response to prayers. And Swami says, listening to their prayers, the Lord comes into the world and showers His grace. Swami says, even Rama and Krishna, they incarnated because the sages and seers prayed to the Lord to come and help the world rid of its evil demons and evil propensities. Swami says, even Ramakrishna Paramahansa, even though he was divinely born, he prayed to Mother Kali. He told him, Kali, please send someone who can preach to the whole world what is dharma, who can help uproot injustice, who can ensure that selfishness diminishes in the world. Even Ramakrishna Paramahansa prayed to the Divine Mother, and that is how you had the Mother send Swami Vivekananda. And Swami says the prayers have to be offered again and again for the realization of this task. And such a prayer should not be given up, even if it does not yield the required fruit in the first attempt. Just like in the external world, if you have something to be done at the government, you requisition repeatedly and run from pillar to post to get that particular done work done from the government. Swami says it's the same. You have to continue to plead with the divine. You have to pray until the world is established in happiness. How do you know the consequence of your soul's yearning? You have no way to measure that the purpose has been achieved. The only way you can see the sign of His arrival is the welfare of the world. Only when there is welfare of the world, you know that the Lord has responded to your prayer. Until that has happened, you have to continuously pray. Swami says, only when you pray, that is when the religion of truth, the religion of compassion, the religion of wisdom, the religion of love will grow and prosper. Until these are firmly rooted, you have to continue your prayers. That responsibility lies on us. The roadway laid out by holy men has to be repaired now and then by either those who travel through it or those claiming authority over it. And Swami says, for repairing this road, that is when the Bodha or the teachings come into being. It is for the sake of such repairs that the Lord sends occasionally some authorized individuals, sages and divine personages. And through their Sadbodha, through their teachings, again the path is opened and the path is made clear and smooth. Thus, when the Lord's will, the inspired lives of these sadhus, these enlightened men, and the teachings of great persons produce that combined effect. So there is the Lord's will, there is this inspired life of sadhus and their teachings. When all of these come together, that is when the welfare of the world happens. So Swami says, if all humanity prays together for the establishment of supreme peace, truth, brotherhood and love, then unrest, injustice, disorder and falsehood can be eradicated. There is no other way out, Swami says. You might go ahead and do whatever you want in terms of technology, in terms of finding the best brains in the world, do social engineering, but the way we can have peace, truth and love in the world is through prayer. When you pray that you have inspired, enlightened beings who come to guide humanity onto the right path. Because only when this happens, then external society as well as internal life of people will transform. And only when that happens, can any welfare measure in the world be lasting and sustainable and credible. There is no point worrying. There is no occasion for despair. I mean, it is against the essential nature of man to plead weakness. You have to collectively take to the path of prayer and service to others and be patient. The Swami talks about prayer and then also emphasizes on service and patience. Swami says, people say service to man is service to God. Yes, that is true. Service to society may be a sacred task. However, even if it is a big endeavor, unless it is sublimated with divine feelings, it will not serve the purpose of empowering mankind. If service has to empower mankind, it has to be sublimated. It has to be done with a spiritual basis. Only then that service will empower mankind. Whatever task one may undertake, if it is done with the full awareness of the understanding that there is divinity residing in every being, only then it lives up to the dictum, Manav Seva is Madhav Seva. Only then it becomes true service. Only when we do with the complete understanding that there is the same divine spark in everyone. In fact, Swami Vivekananda, once stressing on the importance of reaching out and serving to a disciple who wanted to remain absorbed in the Brahman of Vedanta, who just wanted to study Vedanta and didn't want to go out and serve, Swami Vivekananda thundered at him and said, what is the use of remaining always stupefied in samadhi under the influence of non-dualism? Why not you dance like Shiva at some times, and at other times you can be immersed in super consciousness? Who enjoys it more? Is it the one who eats all by himself, or is it the one who shares it with others? Who is it that who enjoys more? He says, okay, granted, by realizing the Atma in meditation, you will attain mukti. But of what use is that mukti to the world? We have to take the whole world with us to mukti. Then you will see conflagration in the domain of great Maya. He said, then you will be able to light a fire that will burn Maya. Only when you learn to take the whole world with you towards mukti, then once that happens, then you will be established in eternal truth, because you will burn Maya. You can burn Maya when you work for others. And then Vivekananda says, in that state, you will be speechless. You will be carried beyond yourself by seeing your own self in every being that breathes, in every atom of the universe. When you realize this, you cannot live in this world without treating everyone with exceeding love and compassion. Then your Vedanta will become practical Vedanta. Otherwise, what is the point of simply being in samadhi? You should also learn to dance like Shiva and emancipate the world. Otherwise, what is the use of your meditation? Swami says, whatever activity you may be engaged in, if it is done suffused with divine thoughts, and if it is on the path of truth and has the fragrance of righteousness, then it automatically becomes service to God. But if you do it with selfish interest of self-aggrandizement, it can never be service to God. But at the same time, Swami says, people who are ceaselessly in contemplation of the divine have no necessity to be engaged in any activity. The merit of their prayers will itself purify the world. Now, this is another perspective. On one hand, Swami said, here Vivekananda said, you have to go out and serve. There's no point just sitting there and being in samadhi. But at the same time, Swami says, if you are in contemplation of the divine ceaselessly, then you don't have to do anything. Because the merit of your sadhana, the merit of your prayers will purify the world. But at the same time, Swami cautions us and says, but this is not everyone's cup of tea. To reach such a state, you must have conquered all kinds of desires and completely purified one's your inner self. Only such exalted minds will be able to realize themselves. Swami clearly says this is not possible for everyone. Only when you have conquered all kinds of desires and you have completely purified your inner self, only then you can say that I don't have to do anything. I will just be in samadhi and just my prayers and my sadhana itself will purify the world. Swami says this is, if you are at that state, then that is not easy. But until you reach there, you have to work. And just because you cannot reach that state does not mean you have to simply sit quiet. To the extent you are able to calm the wavering nature of the mind, to that extent, you have to engage in meditation and chanting the name. And additionally, devote your time in the service of others. How? Expecting nothing in return. So you have to learn to serve. You have to do prayer. You have to engage in meditation and chanting of the name and devote your time in the service of others. It so happened that one brother disciple of Swami Vivekananda once had pointed out to the inner circle of devotees of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa that the master only emphasized bhakti. He talked about only devotion, because that's the sense many people probably also will get, because the master was always lost in trance and in union with the mother. So he said, you know, master only wanted us to practice bhakti. That is what is needed for spiritual seekers, and all these philanthropic activities, organizations, homes for the public good, patriotic work, which Swami Vivekananda is telling us, these are all his peculiar ideas, and this is all the result of his Western education, and he traveled to Europe and America, and that's why he got influenced. This is not the master's instruction for us. This is not the master's teaching. And when Swami Vivekananda heard that, he retorted to that and he said, what do you know? What do you understand of religion? You are only praying with folded hands, looking at the Lord and saying, oh Lord, your nose is beautiful. How sweet are your eyes? And you think you will attain salvation? You think this is what the master taught? You think God is such an easy thing to be achieved? As if he is such a fool as to make himself a plaything in the hands of an imbecile. This is how Swami Vivekananda said. If you think you have understood Sri Ramakrishna, if you think this jhana is dry knowledge to be attained by a desert path, then what you are doing is you are killing the tenderest faculties of the heart. Your bhakti is just sentimental nonsense. This is how Swami Vivekananda said. Who cares for your bhakti and mukti? And he makes that famous statement, I will go into 1,000 hells cheerfully if I can rouse my countrymen who are immersed in ignorance, in tamas, to stand on their own feet and be men inspired with the spirit of karma yoga. I don't mind going into hell 1,000,000 times if I can inspire my countrymen to walk on the path of karma yoga. And he says, I am not a follower of Ramakrishna or anyone. I am a follower of those who serve and help others without caring for their own bhakti and their own mukti, who don't think about their own bhakti and mukti. And this is what Swami is saying. You have to devote your time in the service of others, expecting nothing in return. When one's mind is fixed on the contemplation of the Lord and is engaged in the pursuit of truth, then even if the body and the senses are busy in the acts of service to the world, you will not accumulate karma. Swami says, see, even if you're doing all this work, how can you ensure that this work will not add up to your karma? That will happen only when your mind is fixed on the contemplation of the Lord. Your mind is constantly only on the Lord. Then even if your body and senses are doing anything in the service of the world, nothing will touch you. I mean, it will not lead to adding up to your karma, because you no longer are the doer. Swami says, this is the entire spirit of the Bhagavad Gita. The spirit of Bhagavad Gita is based on this principle. even though one is engaged in karma, he or she will not be a doer, become a non-doer. And once you become a non-doer, the fruits of the karma, effects of the karma, they don't touch you. In fact, towards the end of his life, Swami Vivekananda once wrote to one of his friends, "There is a mellowness and a calmness in life now, which was never there before. I am learning now how to be attached as well as be detached. I am becoming my own master mentally. Mother is doing her own work. I don't worry much now." And then he makes a very powerful statement. He says, "Moths like me die by the thousands every minute." Swami Vivekananda himself, Vivekananda calls himself a moth. He says, "Moths like me die by the thousands every minute. Her work goes on all the same. The mother's work goes on. Glory unto mother. I am just alone and drifting about in the will current of the mother. That's all. In fact, if I try to break it, I get hurt. If I try to break the will current of the mother, if you try to do something on your own, that is when you break the current, the flow of the divine, and that is when you actually get hurt." He says, "Her will be done. Let her will be done. I am happy. I am at peace with myself. In fact, the love for my own kith and kin is growing less every day. My love for the world is growing less every day. My love for the mother is only increasing. Memories of long nights of vigil with Sri Ramakrishna under the Dakshineshwar banyan tree, they are waking up once more." These are the thoughts of Swami Vivekananda towards the fag end of his life. He is now so much at peace with himself because he is more and more realizing that he is nobody. It is the mother who is doing. And he is getting more and more connected to the touch of the master and the wisdom that the mother wants to give him. And he says, "What work? Whose work? Whom to work for? I am free. I am my mother's child. She works. She plays. What should I plan? Why should I plan? What shall I plan? Things came and went just as she liked, without my planning, in spite of my planning. We are her automata. We are nobody. She is the wire puller." So this is the realization that Swami Vivekananda was towards the last few months of his life, where he realized that he is not the doer at all. And that is what Swami says, that once you are in this state, nothing will affect you. So you have to do good. You have to pray. You have to serve. But ensure that when you serve, you know that you are not the doer. Then nothing of what you do will affect you. And Swami says in the last few paragraph, the last paragraph of Prema Vahini, "Jnana alone is the cause for liberation. It is not philosophy, it is not ashrama. To establish oneself in the contemplation of the omnipresent Lord, there are no limitations of time and space. You know, you can be anywhere. There is nothing like a sacred land or a sacred time for this. Wherever the mind revels in the contemplation of the divine, that is the holy place." So you see the Lord everywhere. Whenever you think of the Lord, that is the auspicious moment. Wherever you meditate on the Lord, that then and there, that is the sacred place. Swami says, "For meditation on God, there is no fixed time or place. When and where the mind so desires, then and there is the time and place. It is such enlightened beings who understand the essence of everything around and have disciplined minds along with pure hearts who truly contribute to the welfare of the world." So for the welfare of the world, we need such enlightened beings who not only understand the essence of everything around, who also have disciplined minds with pure hearts. So disciplined mind with pure hearts who understand the reality. It is such people who contribute truly to the welfare of the world. Swami says that we need such enlightened beings, because as I mentioned before, only when we have such enlightened beings, only when we have such spiritual doctors, they will be able to cure the internal maladies of every man within. They will also guide the internal maladies of the external rulers of our society. Because the external rulers also should not go into wrong ways. Their internal mechanism also has to be corrected. So it is these enlightened beings who will do that. Only when that happens can we have welfare in the world. And these enlightened beings will come only when we pray to the Almighty. Swami says, right from this moment, everyone should pray to the Almighty and deserve the blessings of such souls for the welfare of the nation. You need such souls for the welfare of humanity. Only when such souls come, that will result in the lessening of the suffering around us and lead to the well-being of the whole world. The avatar comes when the situation becomes critical, when the avatar thinks that, when the Lord decides that even a prophet, even an enlightened being is not enough. Society has gone into such a perilous state that I have to myself descend. That is when avatar comes. But what we have to do is two things. Constantly pray. Constantly pray for the welfare of the world. And constantly serve. Constantly serve with an attitude that I am not the doer. Constantly serve, keeping no expectation in return. Prayer and service, that is the flow of prema that Swami wants. If we want a world of love and happiness, then we need to do these two things. And this, Swami says, is your supreme duty. To work for the goodness of the world is your supreme duty. You can never hurt anyone. Your highest call is you can never hurt anyone. You're not supposed to do that. You have to give time for japa and dhyana, and you have to find time, resources, energy and inclination to serve. And pray so that the Lord sends enlightened beings who can rectify the diseases within every person and the diseases in the minds of people who are authorities in society. So that is what Bhagwan so emphatically states in this chapter 30 of Premavaini. Dear listeners, Bhagwan has analyzed the problem of the world. He has given a solution to the problem of the world. It is for us to see how we can raise ourselves, how we can contribute, how we can make our lives sublime, how we can make our lives such that we don't exist for the sake of just existence, because that way, Swami says, even animals exist. They eat, drink and procreate and die. Are we also the same, or can we do something wherein we bring peace and solace to everyone? Can we leave the world a better place than what we were born into? Can we facilitate the flow of prema into the world? That is the question that we need to ask ourselves, and we have to pray to Bhagwan to give us that understanding, to give us that strength, to give us that energy, so that we can walk on this path with joy, with happiness, and with a sense of fulfillment, a great sense of fulfillment. We have to think of the Lord and thank the Lord every second, every moment, for everything that He has done for us and is doing for us, and the way He's watching over us and guiding us. So dear listeners, with those thoughts, I will leave you now. So this was the final session of Vahini Satsang as far as Prima Vahini is concerned. We will definitely move on to the subsequent Vahinis in the coming episode of Vahini Satsang. The next Vahini that Swami wrote is Sandeha Nivarini. We want to take up every Vahini in the same order that Bhagwan penned. So, in the coming episodes, we will start our discussion on Sandeha Nivarini. This 108th episode of Vahini Satsang was Bhagwan's grace to us for this last 108 sessions to swim in this beautiful stream of love that is Prema Vahini. We hope you enjoyed these sessions. It's not that we have been able to do justice to everything that Swami has written. We have only shared a few thoughts in every segment that we discussed in this 108 sessions. There are so many ways that you can ruminate and you can take inspiration to walk on this path. So please feel free to share your understandings, your reflections. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org, or you can also send your feedback on WhatsApp to 9393258258. If you have any queries, comments, please feel free to write to us. Please do share with us if you want us to continue Vahini Satsang. Again, to the same WhatsApp number, 9393258258. We prayers to Bhagwan. We seek his permission and blessings to continue our efforts to understand his teachings and to walk on this path with added zeal, inspiration and determination. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.